Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a Wikipedia reading on Uruguay. U-R-U-G-U-A-Y. So there's a fair amount of U's in Uruguay. Isn't that amazing? Look, the reason that I wanted to do Uruguay is that I must admit, as a dumb Australian, I didn't know the difference between Paraguay and Uruguay exactly. If on the map, you forced me to do things. And Paraguay is Spanish, poor, next to Bolivia. It's tucked white in the sort of the bowels of the inner workings of South America. Uruguay is on the coast. A story. And what I like here is that it's got its flag. It's got a little sun emblem on it. It's a really cute, cute flag. And let me see how many stripes it's got. Really interesting. And even number of stripes of blue stripes. And it's got white at the bottom and top of the flag. So in this, it's a really interesting flag. And then it's also got the sun on it. Interesting. I wonder what the history of it. Now, what I also like is it's got a motto called the freedom or death. Like that. I don't know what Australia's motto is. Just she'll be right. Or I shouldn't say buckle off. But it's, you know, that's amazing. Freedom or death. I like that. And Uruguay, officially the Oriental Republic of Uruguay, a country in the southeastern region of South America. Well, I suppose it would be south. It's just middle, you know. I suppose it's south. It borders Argentina on the west and southwest, and Brazil on the northeast, with the Rio de Plata, the River of Silver, to the south. And the Atlantic Ocean to the southeast. So there's a big river, Uruguay. Uruguay is home to an estimated 3.5 billion people. So it's a bit like the size of, or smaller than the size of Sydney. Of whom 1.8 million live in the southeast. So even then, it's Sydney, but it's sort of, you know, like it'd be a real hick place, sort of a bit like Adelaide, I suppose. I don't know. With an area of approximately 176,000 square kilometres, Uruguay is geographically the second smallest nation in South America after Suriname. Wow. Surely that can't be right. Look, I really want to do. In my mind, I have Suriname as in Africa, or as so Suriname. That's the next country I'm going to Wikipedia out. Uruguay was inhabited by the Chaharia people for approximately 4,000 years before the Portuguese established Colônia do Sacramento in 1680, which is fair late. 100 years after Columbus went in. Uruguay was colonized by the Europeans relatively late compared to the neighboring countries. Montevideo, well, you could possibly imagine, because there's no, they wanted to go into the rivers and into the big civilizations. Montevideo was founded as a military stronghold for the Spanish, okay, which is not Portuguese. Well, Spanish in the early 18th century, signifying competing claims over the region, so there must have been. Uruguay won its independence in 1811 and 1828, following the four-way struggle between Portugal and Spain, and later Argentina and Brazil. Argentina is Spanish and Brazil is Portuguese, and now it's sort of left over. You can imagine fighting. Oh, you bloody well have it. It remained subject to foreign influence and intervention throughout the 19th century, the 1800s, with military playing a recurring role in domestic politics. Never a good time. Military junta in South America is not a great thing. A series of economic crises put an end to the democratic period that had begun in the early 20th century, culminating in the 1973 coup, which established a civic military dictatorship. The military government persecuted leftist socialists, this is like Pinochet and all those other things, political opponents, resulting in several deaths and numerous instances of torture by the military. The military relinquished power in 1985. Good old 12 years of military. Ukraine is today a democratic constitutional republic with a president who serves as both head of state and head of government. Well, yeah, I think that's probably okay for that size population. Ukraine is ranked first in Latin America in democracy, peace, low perception of corruption, and e-government. In South America, it comes to press freedom, size of middle class, and prosperity. So, what's going on here? On per capita, Uruguay contributes more troops to the United Nations peacekeeping missions than any other country. It tops the rank in absence of terrorism, a unique position within South America. Well, I'd be interested to know the racial mix of them. It ranks second in the region of economic freedom, income equality, per capita income, inflows, and FDI, whatever that stands for. Uruguay is third best country on the continent in terms of HDI, GDP growth, innovation, and infrastructure. It's regarded as a high income country by the UN. Uruguay is also ranked the third best place in the world for e-participation in 2014. Wow! This is a go-ahead electronic superpower. Wow! Uruguay is an important global exporter of combed wool, rice, soybeans, frozen beef, malt, and milk. Nearly 90% of Uruguay's electricity comes from renewable energy, mostly hydroelectric facilities and wind parks. Uruguay is a founding member of the United Nations, OAS, MINUSCOR, UNASUR, and NAM. Uruguay is regarded as one of the most socially advanced countries in South America. In fact, I wouldn't mind going there now. It ranks high on the global measures of personal rights, tolerance, and inclusion issues. The Economist named Uruguay as Country of the Year in 2013. Acknowledged the policy of legalizing production and sale of consumption of cannabis. Same-sex marriages and abortions are also illegal. So it seems a go-ahead place. Australia sort of likes to think it's a wankatocracy. So the Australian GDP is just under, per capita is just under America, so I'll have to work that one out. So the Gini index, is 39.5. So that's the I was reading here. I don't know what HDI, Gini index is an interesting thing because that's the distribution, the inequality. Okay. The name of the namesake river comes from the Spanish pronunciation of a regional Guarani word for it. There are several interpretations, including Bird River, the River of Uru, via Chicharan, Uru being a common noun for any wildfowl. The name could also refer to a river snail called the Ugara, or Pomola megastoma, that was plentiful in the water. The Spanish colonial times, and for some time thereafter, Uruguay and some neighbouring territories were called Cisplanta, or Banda Oriental de Uruguay, east bank of the Uruguay Banda. Oh, east is east. And then for a few years, the eastern province. Since its independence, the country has been known as La República de Oriental de Uruguay. Oh, Banta means bank, Oriental means east, which literally means Eastern Republic of the Uruguay River. However, it's commonly translated either as the Oriental Republic of Uruguay or the Eastern Republic of Uruguay. History. The documented inhabitants of Uruguay before European colonization era was the Chichara, a small tribe driven south by the Guarani of Paraguay. All right. So these are the people. It's estimated there were about 9,000 Chichara and 6,000 Chana and Guarani at the time of contact with the Europeans. Francisco Riva, you guys, first president, organized the Chichara's genocide. Oh, well, that's not too good, is it? I'm your first president. I'm going to organize the genocide. It was 6,000, it's not too many people, unfortunately. It's not a big civilization, so, which is really interesting. You know, you've got to be in Inca civilizations, but for some reason, perhaps the Incas really relied on roads and cold weather. So for some hot weather, it could often go. The Portuguese were the first early Europeans to enter the region in present-day Uruguay in 1512, which is a short enough time after that. The Spanish arrived in present-day Uruguay in 1516. The indigenous people's fierce resistance to conquest, combined with the absence of gold and silver, limited their settlement in the region during the 16th and 17th century. Well, that's exactly perhaps why a river was a good place to go up if you needed to get gold from it. But it's obviously the silver river. Uruguay then became a zone of contention between the Spanish and Portuguese empires. In 1603, the Spanish began to introduce cattle, which became a source of wealth in the region. The first permanent Spanish settlement was founded in 1624 at Serrano on the Rio Negro. In 1669-71, the Portuguese built a fort at Colonia de Sacramento. Montevideo was founded by the Spanish in the early 18th century as a military stronghold in the country. Its natural harbour soon developed into a commercial area competing with Rio de la Plata, capital, Buenos Aires. No idea. Buenos Aires further up the coast. Uruguay's early 19th century history was shaped by ongoing fights for dominance in the Platine region. It's a silver region between British, Spanish, Portuguese and other colonial forces. In 1606-7, the British army attempted to seize Buenos Aires and Montevideo as part of the Napoleonic Wars. Montevideo was occupied by the British force from February to December 1807. Independence struggle. In 1811, Jorge Grafaso Artigas, who became Uruguay's national hero, launched a successful revolt against the Spanish authorities, defeating them on the 18th of May in the Battle of Las Piedras. In 1813, the new government in Buenos Aires convened. What? Well, something's going to happen there. Because Buenos Aires is not. A constituent assembly where Artigas emerged as a champion of federalism, demanding political and economic autonomy for each area, and for Banta Oriental in particular. The assembly refused to seat the delegates from Banta Oriental, however, but has pursued a system based on unitary centralism. So this is a bit strange. So it was going to be in with Brazil. But the Brazilians wanted everything. Brazilians. Okay. As a result, Artigas broke with the Buenos Aires and besieged Montevideo, taking the city in 1815. Once the troops from Buenos Aires had withdrawn, Banta Oriental appointed his first autonomous government. Artigas organized the Federal League under his protection, consisting of six provinces, four of which later became part of Argentina. Wow. Oh, I sort of understand it. So they kicked off. He's Spanish. The Spanish, I think Brazil was always Portuguese, so I don't quite understand. So it must have been the Portuguese. Brazil must have gone to Spain, and Spain lost it. Okay. In 1816, a force of 10,000 Portuguese troops invaded Banda Oriental from Brazil. They took Montevideo to in 1817. After nearly 4 years of struggle, the Portuguese Kingdom of Brazil annexed Banda Oriental as a province under the name of Planalto. The Brazilian Empire became independent of Portugal in 1812. In response to the annexation, the 33 Orientals, led by João Antonio Lavagella, declared independence on the 26th of August 1825, supported by the United Provinces of Rio del Plata, present-day Argentina. This led to a 500-day-long Cisplatine War. This is interesting, or it may not be interesting to you. I find it astonishing. So this is how it came together. Neither guy decided to gain the upper hand. Okay. And in the 1828 treaties of Montevideo, fostered by the United Kingdom through diplomatic efforts of Viscount John Ponsbury, gave birth to Uruguay, an independent state. 25th of August is celebrated as Independence Day, a national holiday. The nation's first constitution was adopted in 1830. So, who I'm just trying to get out who was the protagonist? Declared independence. Okay, so the Argentina tried to wrestle it from Brazil. It was ended in stalemate. So the English came in and created Uruguay. Wow. So Uruguay didn't fit in. It went down. Said we're going to be independent. Got crushed. And then there was a bit of a squabble, and then eventually the British came in and separated it off. At the time of independence, Uruguay had an estimated population of under 75,000. The era of independence until 1904 was marked by regular military conflicts and civil wars between the Blanco and Colorado parties. Now, the Colorado Party is also up in Paraguay. The political scene in Uruguay became split between the two parties. The conservative Blancos, headed by the second president, Manuel Orb, presenting an agricultural interest of the countryside, while the liberal Concoros, Colorados, Reds, led the first president, Frusco Rivera, representing the business interests of Montevideo. The Uruguayan parties received support from warring political factions in neighbouring Argentina and became involved in Uruguayan affairs. Oh, hurts my head. How can 75,000 people fight each other? I don't believe them. The Colorados favoured the exiled Argentine liberal Unitarios, many of whom had taken refuge in Montevideo. The Blanco president, Manuel Orb, was a close friend of the Argentine ruler, Manuel de Rosas. Oh my god. On the 15th of June, 1838, an army led by Colorado leader River overthrew President Orb, who fled to Argentina. River declared war on the Rosas in 1839. The conflict would last 13 years and became known as the Guerra Grande, the Great War. Guerra Grande. Well, I don't know how the size of these armies could be. In 1843, the Argentine army overran Uruguay on Orba's behalf, but failed to take the capital. God. The siege of Montevideo, which began in February 1843, would last 9 years. The besieged Uruguay called for resident foreigners for help, which led the French and the Italian legions being formed later exiled, led by the exiled Giuseppe Garibaldi. Whoa! So this led to Italian independence later on. In 1845, Britain and France intervened against the Rosas to restore commerce to normal levels in the region. Their efforts proved ineffective, and in 1849, tired of war, both withdrew from after signing a treaty favourable to the Rosas. It appeared that Montevideo would finally fall when the uprising against the Rosas, led by José Just, governor of Argentina's Entre Rose province, began. The Brazilian intervention in 1851 on behalf of the Coroados, combined with the uprising, changed the situation with the Orb, was defeated. The siege of Montevideo was lifted and the guerrilla ground finally came to an end. Montevideo rewarded Brazil's support by signing treaties that confirms Brazil's right to intervene in Uruguay's internal affairs. Oh, far out. In accordance with the 1851 treaties, Brazil intervened militarily in Uruguay as often as it deemed necessary. In 1865, the Triple Alliance was formed by the Emperor of Brazil, President of Argentina, and Colorado General Fifo Flores, the Uruguayan head of government, whom they both helped to gain power. The Triple Alliance declared war on Paraguayan leader. Oh, that's the Triple Alliance. Oh my God, that's the most bloody thing. Resulting in the Paraguayan War and ended by the invasion of Paraguay. Its defeat by the armies of the three countries. Montevideo was used as a supply station for the Brazilian Navy, experienced a period of prosperity and relative calm during the war. Oh, that's the most bloodthirsty war ever. Oh, so that's the Triple Alliance. It wasn't Bolivia, it was Uruguay. Okay. The constitutional government of General Lorenzo Batalugaro suppressed the revolution of the Lancers by the Blancos. After 2 years of struggle, a peace agreement was signed in 1872, which gave Blancos a share in the emoluments and the functions of government, through control of four of the departments of Uruguay. The establishment of a policy of co-participation represented the search for a new formula of compromise based on the coexistence of the parties in power and the power of opposition. So it's the business and landcraft. It's only 75,000 people. The establishment of the policy, despite the agreement, Colorado was threatened by the failed tricolor revolution of 1875 and the revolution of Quebracho in 1886. My God, the Australian history is so boring compared to this. The Colorado effort to reduce the Blancos to only three departments caused Blanco uprising in 1897, which ended in the creation of 16 departments, of which Blanco now controls six. Blancos were given a third of the seats in the Congress. This division of power lasted until the President José Batel Ordaz instituted his political reforms, which caused the last uprising of the Blancos in 1904, and ended in the Battle of Malcia and the death of Blanco, leader of Apro Salva. My God, it's the most bloodthirsty, warlike. Oh, far out. Between 1875 and 1890, the military became the centre of power, no doubt. During the authoritarian period, the government took steps towards the organisation of the country as a modern state, encouraging economic and social transformation. Pressure groups consisting mainly of businessmen, haciendos and industrialists were organised and had a strong influence on government. A transition period, 1886 to 90, followed, during which the politicians began recovering lost ground and some of the civilian participation in government occurred. After Guerra-Grande, there was a sharp rise in the number of immigrants, primarily from Italy and Spain. My God, because they just beat the stuffings out of each other. Okay, Italy and Spain. By 1879, the total population of the country grew, was over 438,000. The economy reflected a steep upswing, if demonstrated graphically, above all other related economic determinants in livestock and racing exports. Montevideo became a major economic centre in the region and an import, entreport for goods to Argentina, Brazil and Paraguay. Oh, poor Paraguay. Poor. Oh, this is Colorado. I just... You know, obviously these people are bloody violent people. In the 20th century, Colorado leader, which is red, shows Battelle de Oldens, was elected president in 1903. The following year, the Blancos led a rural revolt, and 8 bloody months of fighting ensued before their leader, Aspel Serrato, was killed in the battle. Government forces emerged victorious, leading the end of co-participation politics, which had begun in 1872. Battelle had 2 terms, 1903-7 and 1911-17, during which, taking advantage of the nation's stability and growing economic facility, he instituted major reforms such as a welfare program, government participation in many facets of the economy, and plural executive. Gabriel Terra became president in March 31. It's T-E-R-R-A. His inauguration coincided with the effects of the Great Depression. The social climate became tense as a result of a lack of jobs. There was confrontation in which police and leftists died. In 1913, Terra organized a coup d'etat, dissolving the General Assembly and governing by decree. A new constitution was promulgated in 1934, transferring powers to the president in general. The Terra government weakened and neutralized the economic nationalism and social reform. Uruguay, my God, what's happening to Uruguay? These were just insane military countries. No wonder Australia is such a passive place. Oh, God, it's really worrying the pants off me. In 1938, general elections were held, and brother-in-law, General Alfredo Baldomir, was elected president. Under the pressure of organised labour and nationalist party, Baldomir advocated free elections, freedom of the press, and a new constitution. Although Baldomir declared Uruguay neutral in 1939, British warships and the German ship Admiral Graf Spee fought a battle not far off Uruguay's coast. Admiral Graf Spee took refuge in the Montevideo, claiming sanctuary of a neutral port, but was later ordered out. Oh dear. In the 1950s, partly because of the worldwide decrease in demand for Ukrainian agricultural products, Ukrainians suffered from a steep drop in the standard of living, which led to the student militancy and labour unrest. An armed group known as the Tupamarios, oh my God. The Palo Salvo, built in 1825, was one of the tallest buildings. It's such a weird building. Engaged in activities such as bank robberies, kidnapping, and assassination, in addition to attempting to overthrow the government. Whoa, I can't believe this. Civil military regime. President Jorge Pacheco declared a state of emergency in 1968, followed by a further suspension of civil liberties in 1972 and 1973. Amid increasing economic and political turmoil, the armed forces asked President João Maria Bordaberry closed the Congress and established a civilian military regime. Uruguay was on the receiving end of Operation Condor, a CIA-backed campaign of political repression and state terror involving intelligence operation and assassination of opponents. Far out! According to one, around 200 Uruguayans are known to have been killed and disappeared, with hundreds of more illegally detained and tortured during the 12-year civil military rule of 73 to 85. Most were killed in Argentina and other neighbouring countries, with 36 of them having been killed in Uruguay. According to Eddie Kaufman, cited by Dr. David Adman, Uruguay at the time had the highest per capita number of political prisoners in the world. Kaufman, who spoke in the US Congress hearing 76 on behalf of the Amnesty International, estimated that one in every 5 Uruguayans went to exiles and 150 were detained, and 1,500 were in prison, most of them tortured. So how is Ukraine such a fantastic place now? I just don't believe this Wikipedia page. Return to democracy, 84 to present. So you can imagine how this goes. A new constitution drafted by the military was rejected in the November 1980 referendum. Remember, 82 was when the... Falklands War. Okay, following the referendum, armed forces announced a plan to return to civilian rule. National elections were held in 84. The Colorado Party, Julio Mario Sangaretti, won the presidency and served from 85 to 90. The first Sangaretti administration implemented economic reforms to colorate democracy following the country's years under military rule. The National Party, Luis Alberto Lacalle, won the 89 presidential election, and amnesty from human rights abuses was endorsed by the referendum. Sangaretti was then re-elected in 94. Both presidents continued the economic structural reforms initiated under the reinstatement of democracy and other important reforms aimed at improving electoral system security, social security, education, and public safety. In 1989, national elections were held under the new electoral system established in 96. Constitutional amendment. Colorado Party candidate Charles Battelle, aided by the support of the National Party, defeated Broad Front candidate Tabez Vaquez, I can't pronounce it. The formal coalition ended in 2002 when bankers withdrew their ministers from the cabinet, although the bankers continued to support the Colorados on most issues. Low commodity prices and continued support of the Colorados and economic difficulties in Ukraine remained export markets, starting in Brazil and with the devaluation of the real and then in Argentina in 2002 caused severe recession. The economy contracted 11%, unemployment climbed 21%. The percentage of Ukrainian poverty was over 30%. In 2004, Ukrainians selected Tabrez Vazquez as president, while giving the Broad Front the majority of both houses of parliament. Vazquez stuck to economic orthodoxy. As commodity prices soared, the economy recovered from the recession. He tripled foreign investment, cut the poverty and unemployment, cut public debt from 79% of GDP to 60%, and kept inflation steady. In 2009, Jorge Murcia, a former left-wing guerrilla leader, the Tupamaros, who spent almost 15 years in prison during the country's military raids, emerged as the new president at the Broad Front and won the election the second time. Abortion was legalized in 2012, followed by same-sex marriage and cannabis the following year. My God, so he's got a basically left-wing theme. In 2014, Tabez Vazquez was elected to a non-consecutive second presidential term, which began in March 2015. In 2020, he was succeeded by Luis Alberto P.O.U., member of the National Party, the 42nd president of Uruguay. So, is it so good? I don't know. Oh, God, yes. Geography. 176,000 square kilometres. Continental land of... Oh, so its land is 150 square kilometres, with jurisdictional water and small river islands. Ukraine is the second small sovereign nation in South America after Suriname. The third small territory, and the third smallest territory, or French Guiana, is the smallest. The landscape features mostly rolling plains and low hills, ranges, and fertile coast lowland. Uruguay has 660 kilometres of coastline. A dense fluvial network covers the country, consisting of four river basins or deltas: the Rio Plata Basin, the Uruguay River, the Laguna Marin, and Rio Negro. The major internal river, the Rio Negro, Black River, several lagoons are found along the Atlantic coast. The highest point of the country is Cerro Chato. His peak is 514 metres, so that's sort of halfway up to, say, Springwood. Our heart's over here. And Montevideo is the southernmost capital city of the Americas, the third most southerly in the world, only Canberra and Wellington are further south. So I don't quite understand this. So I'm really confused. So what's the capital of Argentina? That's just astonishing. I'll have to go and read that one up. Canberra's the southernmost capital in... My godfather! Surely that... I'll have to have a good look. Good look on the map. Four. Wow, so I'll have to really read that. There are 10 national parks in Uruguay, 5 wetland areas to the east, several hill country, and 1 in the west coast of the Rio Uruguay. It is the only country in South America situated entirely in the south of the Tropic of Capricorn. Oh, okay. Located in a temperate zone, Uruguay has a climate of relatively mild, fairly uniform nationwide. According to Köppen climate classification, most of the country has a humid subtropical climate. Only in some spots of the Atlantic coast and at the summit of its highest hill, the Chucho Grande, the climate is oceanic. Similar variation are pronounced, but extremes of temperature are rare, as would be expected with the abundance of water, high humidity, and fog are common. The absence of mountains, which act as weather barriers, makes all locations vulnerable to high winds and rapid changes of weather as fronts and storms sweep across the country. Both summer and winter weather may vary from day to day, and passing storm fronts, where the hot northerly winds may occasionally followed by cold wind pampero and Argentina pampers. Uruguay is largely uniform temperature throughout the year, with summers being tempered by winds off the Atlantic. Severe cold winter in the winter is unknown. The heaviest precipitation occurs in the autumn months, along more frequently rainy spells occur in winter. The mean annual precipitation is generally greater than 40 inches, decreasing with distance from the sea coast, are relatively evenly distributed throughout the year. The average temperature is whatever it is. Uruguay is a representative government. Uruguay is a representative... My God, Uruguay is such a bloody history. It's a representative democratic republic with a presidential system. Its members of government are elected in 5-year terms by a universal suffrage system. Uruguay is a unitary state. Justice, education, health, security, foreign policy and defence are all administered nationwide. Okay. Executive power is exercised by the president. Oh, that's what they meant. Brazil, I just wanted one Brazil, and they wanted to be a state. Okay. Legislative power is constituted by the General Assembly, composed of 2 chambers, the Chambers of Representatives, consisting of 99 members, and the Chambers of Senators. This is 31 members, 30 of whom are elected 5-year term by proportional representation, and a vice president who presides over the chamber. The judicial arm is exercised by the Supreme Court and the bench of judges nationwide. The members of the Supreme Court are elected by the General Assembly, and members of the bench are selected by the Supreme Court with the consent of the Senate. Uruguay adopted a current constitution in 67. Many provisions were suspended in 73, but re-established in 85. Drawing on Switzerland and its use of initiative, the Uruguayan constitution also allows citizens to repeal law or change the constitution by popular initiative, which culminates in a nationwide referendum. This method has been used several times in the past 15 years to confirm laws renounce the prosecution of members of the military who violated human rights during the regime, to stop privatisation of public utility companies, to defend pensioners' income and protect water resources. For most of Uruguay's history, the Pato Colorado has been government. However, in 2004 Ukrainian general election, the Broad Front won absolute majority in parliamentary elections. Sergei Mika of the Broad Front defeated Luis Alberto Lacalle of the Blancos to win the presidency. In 2010, Latin Metropole found that within Latin America, Ukrainians are among the most supportive of democracy and by far the most satisfied with the way democracy works in their country. Ukrainians ranked 27th in the Freedom House, Freedom of the World Index. Oh, God. According to the Economist Intelligence Units in 2012, Uruguay scored 18.17 in the democracy index and ranked equal 18th amongst 25 countries considered to be in full democracies around the world. Uruguay ranks 18th in the World Corruption Perception Index imposed by Transparency International. Yeah. Australia's bloody corrupt. We're not sort of openly corrupt. It's just, this is so much corruption. Administrative division. Ukraine is divided into 19 departments whose local administration replicate the division of executive and legislative powers. Each department elects its own authorities throughout universal suffrage systems. The department's executive authorities resides in a superintendent and legislative authority in the departmental board. So, the departments are really small. They're like our councils. Like this, Montevideo's got 1 million people in it. Okay, well, I'll stop there and read a second one coming up soon. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.